And welcome back to Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Dee Dotson, and you're tuning in to a special two-part series, Inside the Fentanyl Crisis in Northwest Indiana. We're joined now by Assistant Special Agent Alfred Chip Cook, who's tasked with protecting the 8094 corridor and the families of Northern Indiana. Today, we're peeling back the curtain on how the DEA is evolving to meet the 2026 threat. ASAC Chip, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dee.
So as I shared in my opening, you took the helm of the Miraville Field Office in 2021, correct?
Yes.
Can you please take a moment to pull back the curtain for us and explain exactly what your role is as ASAC in charge, what that role entails, and how your division's jurisdiction across Illinois and Indiana works to disrupt the specific pipeline that brings synthetic threats into our local communities?
Yeah. Thanks, Dee. That's a great question. The Drug Enforcement Administration's Maryville District Office is part of our DEA Chicago Field Division, and that incorporates the state of Indiana, Illinois, and Wisconsin. So we have a wide swath of the Midwest region. Here, the Maryville District Office, we're responsible for investigating federal drug crimes pretty much in the top half of the state of Indiana. South of us, of course, we have the Indianapolis District Office. So the Indianapolis office and our Maryville office are our two biggest offices here in the state. But across the top half here, not only are we in Maryville, which covers all of the region, pretty much as far east as LaPorte County and as far south as Tippecanoe County.
Wow.
But we also have a newer office in South Bend, Indiana. And we also have an office that's been there a long time in Fort Wayne as well. Mm-hmm. So the Maryville District Office is primarily in Maryville with responsibility for the region, but we are across the entire top half of the state. And we work very much in conjunction with Southern Indiana. We work very closely with Southern Michigan. We have a wonderful relationship with Michiana. And we're always reaching over to Ohio, and certainly we're always reaching over to Illinois as well. So even though we are an Indiana-based DEA office, we're very much focused on multi-jurisdictional approaches here in the Midwest. And you're right, being the crossroads of America, the highways and byways of northern Indiana, we do have a lot of drug traffickers who are moving through our state, whether they are going eastbound back to New York, a lot of times with drug proceeds, or they're coming westbound to go to be sourced with a variety of methamphetamine, fentanyl, cocaine, heroin in Chicago. The nice thing about the partnerships that we have, and we certainly can get into that, but the highway interdiction efforts here in the state of Indiana, and specifically here in northern Indiana, with the Indiana State Police and all of our state and local partners. A lot of highways and a lot of byways here, Dee, which means law enforcement on the highway, they're always looking out for those drugs moving across our state.
Talk a little bit about those partnerships. I was going to have you speak to that later on in our conversation, but because that is now front of mind, speak about that, because that is so important, those partnerships with other law enforcement organizations.
That's one of our, I say, biggest bread and butter. That's one of our joys as an agency, DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration. We've been around since 1973.
Wow.
So for 50-plus years, almost really 53, pushing 53 years, one of our biggest success stories is our ability to partner with our state, local, and as I say, our other federal counterparts. So here in the region in particular, we work very closely with there are so many police departments here in this area. And we have a wonderful relationship with, I'd say, the majority of them. I'd like to say all of them, because I feel like I probably do know all of the chiefs and the sheriffs in the area. Certainly with the Indiana State Police as well. And with regard to those partnerships, it's one thing to know those chiefs and sheriffs, to know those narcotics departments, those sections in those agencies. But it's another thing when we actually truly partner with them on criminal investigations. And we have a variety. And we don't give out the numbers because it is a bit sensitive, but we have many state and local detectives from a variety of agencies from out throughout Northwest Indiana, who are actually embedded in DEA Merrillville, embedded in DEA South Bend, embedded in DEA Fort Wayne. So it makes for a very nice relationship, state, local, and federal. But even on the investigative side, DEA cannot be successful if we operate unilaterally, right?
Correct.
Like we have to rely on our state and local counterparts, other federal counterparts, because they bring a lot of intelligence and a lot of resources and a lot of investigative techniques to the table as well. So it's the proverbial or the ultimate, whatever you want to call it, force multiplier.
Yeah.
Right. When you kind of link up and connect and have those, as the term I love, collaborative efforts. I think that's so important. And in law enforcement, that's really a big success story. I was actually out in Fort Wayne not too long ago and chatting with some folks out there. And what's true in Fort Wayne is actually very much true here in the region as well.
Really?
Because all of the agencies, we share information, we share intelligence, we coordinate, we deconflict. There's no bad blood. We talk amongst ourselves, state, local, other federal. Just like in Fort Wayne, here, not a really good place if you want to traffic drugs, if you want to be a drug dealer. Because eventually, you're going to get caught. Eventually, you're going to be held accountable. Because we talk, we meet, we share information, we share intelligence. And it's kind of hard to win if you're moving drugs when you got us battling right up against you.
As an aside, that is just so exciting to hear about the collaboration between all of the different agencies in the different cities in Northwest Indiana or in Northern Indiana. That is so exciting to hear because, as you said, bad guys may think that they are able to get away with things in this particular area, but when the communication is shared across the region, across law enforcement agencies, there's no way the bad guy can get away. So I'm so excited to hear that.
And we love that. That's, you know, not that. One of the joys of my job and one of the joys of, I guess, just our success with these other agencies is that communication.
Right.
Just 2 days ago, I had a very great, wonderful, long talk, building a relationship, strengthening a relationship with Derek Cannon. He's the chief of police of the Gary Police Department.
City of Gary, right.
And we work very closely with the Gary Police Department. And Derek, Chief Cannon, Derek and I are very good friends, which has developed through our relationship of partnership building.
Wow.
So we've become friends and we've become colleagues. And as a result, we've got excellent sharing between the Gary Police Department and DEA, which leads to success and leads to putting bad guys with guns and dope in jail.
Absolutely. So. Which leads to a safer Northwest Indiana,
yes,
a safer region. So I'm so excited to hear that. Now, ASAC Cook, I want to talk to you. I want to pivot for a moment and just say that national data shows a slight cooling in overdose deaths in the region. But sometimes Northwest Indiana feels a bit different in reality because usage of fentanyl is not as visible. It's not really out in the open on our public streets in comparison to what we see in our evening national news, right? And so I want to ask you, is the region finally seeing a relief, or are Lake, Porter, Stark, LaPorte counties still bucking the trend?
Well, the good news is Lake County, the region, Northwest Indiana, and I've been here just shy of 5 years, our overdose numbers, our overdose deaths, fatalities linked to fentanyl and all of drugs, our numbers here really do mirror, as I say, the national numbers. So the good news is, yes, there has been a significant decline within the past couple of years nationally of overdose deaths and certainly those linked to fentanyl. There has been a significant, tremendous, fantastic decline. I think the last numbers I looked at, at least here in Lake County in the past, well, let's say going back to 2021 to 2024, maybe into early 2025, there's been about a 30% decline in overdose deaths just here in Lake County.
That's
alone.
Amazing to
that's
hear.
That's fantastic.
That's
right?
Amazing to hear. Absolutely. That's,
and these are lives. These are people.
These
right?
are people.
I mean, that, you know, our job as DEA is to disrupt and dismantle drug trafficking organizations, cartels.
Right.
You know, we're all over that. But we want to disrupt all of those cartels because the ultimate goal that we aspire to is to save lives.
Right.
So So if we see nationally and then here locally, if there's a 30% decline in overdose deaths, right. overdose poisonings, fatalities, we do celebrate that.
Good.
However,
okay.
it's only a 30% decline, and we still are losing Lake County residents. We lost 156 in 2024 wow. residents, and 63% of them were to fentanyl. So that's 156 residents of Lake County alone. Poor souls, people with families, everything. So, you know, the goal is to get that down to zero, right? That's the ultimate goal. But, and this should be known, even though Lake County has had a significant decrease, compared to the other counties in the area, Lake County is just a bit higher on still the amount of deaths linked to fentanyl. We still have some work to do.
Okay.
I'm not a sociologist.
Yeah.
I can't exactly tell you why Lake County might be a tick above others, but we are a very populated community here. We're very close to Chicago. We're right up 65 from Indianapolis. So there are definitely a lot of factors to play into that. But the good news is, and I am the consummate optimist, I am wired as an optimist. The good news is that the numbers are dropping, and you know, we can thank certainly those collaborative efforts among law enforcement. We can thank prevention. We can thank educators. We can thank media. This is very important.
Yeah.
And we appreciate getting this message out today. Everybody is working lockstep to get these numbers down, because these aren't just numbers. These are lives and these are people.
These are lives. Right? These are our friends and our neighbors. Absolutely.
Our friends and our neighbors. You know?
Yeah. We're just so grateful for the work that you're doing. So I want to say this. So the DEA recently launched the Fentanyl Free America Initiative, which signals a massive shift in how you fight this war. And this isn't just about seizing bricks of drugs anymore. It's about the entire ecosystem. And as you just shared, it's really about saving the lives of our friends and our neighbors, right? So to that point, as you were just speaking about the 8094 corridor being one of the busiest in the world, I believe, and Northwest Indiana is often called a transit point. Has your strategy changed to disrupt the flow of fentanyl from Chicago's west side? You were speaking about Chicago, directly into communities in Northwest Indiana.
Yes. In that, you know, I mentioned the interdiction efforts and specifically the Indiana State Police. I am aware, you know, I don't work for the Indiana State Police, but we have a fantastic relationship with them. And even in their new leadership, they're making a huge push to increase their highway interdiction efforts. And as a result of that, our state and local counterparts or our local counterparts working with the state doing that as well. So on the interdiction side alone.
Okay.
The residents of Northwest Indiana should probably be happy to know that there is more drug enforcement on our highways and byways of Northwest and Northern Indiana, which is good. Even on the investigative side, we continue to bring in investigative techniques and tools, as we would call them, bring in additional technology. Drug dealers are always going to try to evade detection, try to, you know, evade law enforcement, and we're going to be right there with them. They constantly evolve, and we constantly evolve. But you can't evolve without funding. You can't evolve without manpower.
That's true.
And we have here in Northern Indiana, in the Maryville District Office, we have increased funding for drug investigations. We have, and we continue, and again, the numbers of personnel are sensitive, so we don't release that, but I'm very excited for within the next 6 months here in the Maryville District Office, we are adding several DEA special agents who are coming to our office, who have chosen to come here.
Really?
They're not being, you know, voluntold.
They're not voluntold, right? Yeah. That's awesome.
These are several career special agents who might be from here, have some family here, and these agents are vetted. So these are going to be strong investigators. So we're adding funding, we're adding resources on the DEA side. And, you know, I think too, locally, I think about the acronym is HIDA. It's the High Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas. It's a national program run out of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, which is a White House initiative, ONDCP. Mm-hmm. And HIDA is throughout the country. There are, I think, 33 or so different HIDA. HIDTA, throughout the country. The Indiana hideout, which covers the entire state of Indiana, is actually headquartered here in Lake County. So here's White House funding, federal funding, separate from the Department of Justice, separate from DEA, separate from FBI or ATF. Mm-hmm. This is ONDCP funding. And that HIDA, again, HIDTA, High mm-hmm. Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas, it's headquartered here.
Wow.
Right here, and I won't say where, but yeah. right here in Lake County.
Wow.
And so that's just another resource. Wow. And they're overseeing ONDCP, HIDA operations and programs throughout yeah. the entire state. Mm-hmm. The fact is, we have them right here.
Wow.
And that's just another partnership in the partnership game for DEA, for all the feds, yeah. and for all the state and locals. So everybody's humming along.
Yeah.
Nobody, and again, you know, we meet a lot, state, local, law enforcement, federal. We're always meeting, specifically, I think, about the District 1 program. It's a collaborative effort and meetings every other month or so with police chiefs and sheriffs from the area.
Wow.
We're always awesome. Talking, yeah. we're always sharing resources and sharing yeah. information. And, you know, that really does, that's the game changer. It's, again, yeah. you know, the force multiplier that yeah. we have seen even domestically and even internationally.
Wow.
In DEA, when we go out, we're yeah. in, we're 86 offices in 66 different countries.
Wow. Or
maybe it's 86 offices in 66 different countries.
Wow.
But we're
that's
we're,
amazing.
Out of all federal law enforcement, DEA yeah. has the biggest global footprint wow. internationally than anybody else.
Yeah.
So even on the international front, right? Because all of this dope, whether it's fentanyl, methamphetamine, heroin, cocaine, it's all coming to the United States from somewhere else.
Yeah.
So it's super important, just like what we're doing here in Indiana, mm-hmm. you know, working kind of lockstep with our partners. Mm-hmm. We're doing the same thing internationally.
Great.
We're working with those foreign counterparts to stop drugs getting to the homeland, as we say.
Yeah.
So a lot of efforts, just a lot of grassroots, mm-hmm. collective
yeah.
working together.
Yeah.
We're very, again, being back to the consummate optimist.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of success just in the just shy of 5 years that I've been here, mm-hmm. and the partnerships here and the tools that we have. It's been special. It really has been.
Good. I want to put a pin in our conversation because as I shared with you before our conversation today offline and even in our conversation right now, I have to put a pin in our conversation because no matter what question I'm asking you, I cannot help but note your passion for the work that you do. So I want you to take a moment to highlight the passion of the agents that work alongside you in Northern Indiana and across the areas in which you cover. Take a minute to give them a shout out and share their passion. Yeah,
thanks, Dee. That's a great, I love that question. You, and again, I'm a career DEA agent. I'm just about to start my 27th year with DEA.
Wow.
You cannot be a DEA special agent. You cannot be a DEA task force officer. We have the folks that work on our regulatory side. We have chemists. We have, intelligence analysts. I'll just say it's very difficult to work within DEA if you do not have that passion in your belly,
yeah.
if you do not have that passion in your heart mm-hmm. to make America safer and healthier. And really, again, our vision is a fentanyl-free America.
Right.
When we think about a vision, it's like, what are we aspiring to? What do we want to accomplish?
Yeah.
We are truly passionate and very optimistic. Yeah. about a fentanyl-free America.
Right.
And the people that I have worked with throughout my career, they have that passion in their gut.
Good.
And you can feel it.
Good.
And it's tangible and intangible.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you work alongside somebody mm-hmm. in whatever type of job series they're in, and you're all working forward towards the mission of DEA and towards the vision of a drug-free America,
mm-hmm.
and you can feel, it's palpable, you can feel their passion, mm-hmm. You thrive off of that.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And listen, you know, drug work is hard work.
Yeah.
It's long hours,
yeah.
crazy hours.
Yeah.
It's violent. It's dangerous. We see a lot of tough things.
Yeah.
There's one in particular, but I had many situations in my career where you just see families ripped apart and the sadness that, that drug trafficking and even through drug addiction, you see people struggling themselves and how it just families. And so this has been, it's been a very rewarding career and a very rewarding job, but we do see a lot of tough things. But when you're surrounded by like-minded individuals who are as passionate as you hope you are as a person, it does help us move that ball forward, which again, I think shows the successes that we have. If you don't have passion for drug enforcement, you will quickly fizzle out.
Yeah.
You'll burn out.
Yeah.
And you know, some people do, right? Some people after a couple of years, they go, eh, you know what I mean? This isn't for me.
Right.
But those of us who stay in, we're all in.
Good.
And even so much so, one day I'm going to retire. And I'm even thinking, when I retire, how can I still stay in this game?
Wow.
Because I don't want to give this up. Right?
That's
because you're working for a mission. You're working for a mission.
Yes.
You're working for a vision. And it's like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to pull me away from this job because I refuse to leave because we're in it.
We're
in it. And it's so wonderful. Certainly here in DEA Maryville, South Bend, Fort Wayne, DEA Chicago.
Yeah.
Those people have it too.
Yeah.
And it's really been a pleasure and an honor to be surrounded by folks like that.
I will tell you this, and I know I'm derailing a bit from our conversation today, but I think that that was so important for you to share because we hear so many negative stories about community interaction with law enforcement and community thoughts about law enforcement. And so I thought it was so important that you let our listening and viewing audience hear the hearts of those that serve alongside you. And so I'm so glad that you took the opportunity to celebrate those agents.
Thanks, Dee.
We hear that the usage of fentanyl, just a few grains of salt, is a lethal dose, right? So how does the DEA handle the rise of hot loads where poorly mixed batches lead to mass casualty events in Northwest Indiana?
So I'm going to pull my pen because I always carry a pen.
Good.
And it's a good prop specifically for this. And you mentioned it. We talk about in DEA, and there's a great graphic. It's actually with a pencil, but I carry a pen. 2 milligrams of illicit fentanyl, and the difference there, just as a complete, there's a side step to this, for the listening community. When we mention fentanyl, we're not talking about pharmaceutical-grade fentanyl made in a lab in New Jersey. There are a lot of pharmaceutical labs in New Jersey. We're not talking about that. We're talking about illicit fentanyl, which starts as precursor chemicals in China, sent by Chinese chemical companies, Chinese pharmaceutical companies, illegally, rogue, to Mexico. The chemicals are then accepted by the Mexican cartels. We hear a lot about Sinaloa cartel. We hear a lot about the Jalisco cartel, CJ&G. The Mexican cartels take those precursor chemicals. They then construct the illicit fentanyl to very much closely match the pharmaceutical grade fentanyl. So this is not pharmaceutical grade fentanyl. This is made in a lab in some random one-off field in the middle of Jalisco or, you know, somewhere in Mexico.
Yeah.
And then that fentanyl, that illicit fentanyl, is then laced, injected, somehow, some way, gets its way into the meth, heroin, cocaine, which comes up through Mexico, and then into the United States. But back to the pen, super important. And to anybody, right, you think of the tip of a pen, and I'm looking at that right now, or the tip of a pencil. That's that 2 milligrams of fentanyl, which is a lethal dose, is enough to fit on the tip of this pen.
Right.
So to put things in perspective, and I'll get a little personal, I'm a 230-pound guy. Okay? I probably should hit the treadmill a little more. I love the treadmill. The treadmill doesn't always help me. But I'm a 230-pound guy. And this 2 milligrams of fentanyl, which could fit on the tip of my pen or on the tip of a pencil, is enough to kill me.
Wow.
So at least hopefully the pen or the pencil image and then the 230-pound chunky guy image paints the picture of the lethality of fentanyl. So you can imagine cocaine, and we've seen an uptick in cocaine. We've seen it here in Lake County.
Correct.
Methamphetamine, which is huge, huge presence in Indiana, and heroin, which has decreased a little, but it's still out there. It just takes 2 milligrams to kill somebody.
Wow.
And then we also talk a lot about counterfeit pills. Correct. And that's another huge topic for us.
Right.
Fake, counterfeit oxycodone, Adderall, and Xanax. And those are the top three fake. Can't we say counterfeit pills, right?
Okay.
These aren't oxys. These aren't Xanax. These are not Adderall, highly used and abused on college campuses and to anybody studying for exams, right? We've all heard about people who are prescribed Adderall. It helps them get through exams. But these counterfeit pills, which are being pushed on social media, which are highly available and widely used throughout the community, college campuses, high schools.
Yeah.
These are not pills that you're getting from the brick and mortar pharmacy from your doctor.
Yeah.
But we have, there's so much illicit fentanyl in these counterfeit pills as well. So it's in every drug through the land, and that's really what's killing everybody. Fentanyl, again, about to start my 27th year with DEA, we've always had fatality issues with drug overdoses.
Yeah.
Fentanyl is the worst, the wildest drug problem that we've ever had in this country. And it's all because of those 2 milligrams that fit on the top of Chip's pen that sits in his pocket.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So the name of the game for us really is fentanyl, right? We're always going to be following, you're going to chase cocaine, you're going to chase methamphetamine on drug investigations. But for us, if we can target and investigate and seize people who are moving fentanyl, people who are putting fentanyl in their drugs, and if we can seize fentanyl, whether in powder form or pill form, that's a really, really good recipe for decreasing deaths, because that's what's killing everybody right now.
ASAC Chip, in preparing for our conversation today, one of the things I learned is that, and correct me if I'm not saying this correctly, xylazine or trank is being mixed into the supply, as you just shared. But what I learned is that it does not respond to Narcan. So how is your division pivoting to address this zombie drug complication?
Yeah, xylazine and then there's also, and right, that's called trank, referred to as trank. It's like sibling, and I'll probably mess this up, but it's called metadominine, I think is not right, but it's something like that. It's another similar to xylazine, and that is referred to as rhino trank. So you've got I'm not even going to bother anymore, but back to xylazine and the meta drug that I am clearly having problems pronouncing. Both are non-opiates. So these are veterinary use drugs that are used on rhino trank. They're used on elephants. They're used on animals as like sedatives. And the problem is when that is found in any type of drug linked to synthetic opioids or fentanyl, any type of drug with fentanyl that has xylazine in it, trank, that drug does not respond. If somebody is overdosing, if they're turning blue, if they've fallen on the ground and they're going out, you can administer Narcan, naloxone, but if xylazine or the meta drug, the rhino trank, is part of that chemical pharmaceutical makeup of that drug, Narcan's not going to work.
Wow.
Then why are people using this? Well, they don't know that xylazine, which is a non-opiate, veterinary use, not meant for people.
Human consumption,
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They don't know that's in there. A lot of times, maybe the majority of times, they don't even know fentanyl is in their cocaine or their meth.
Yeah.
But, you know, now you're at a point where people are overdosing and they're dying, but the dealers, they love it because xylazine extends the high. Xylazine increases the euphoric feelings of the high.
Okay.
So by placing xylazine or rhino trank, into the drugs, for a drug dealer, hey, this means he's got more people who are going to come back to his product because, again, It extends the high and the euphoric feelings go through the roof. So people just naturally, because the body is going to want, we call it you know, back in the day when heroin was the big problem in the United States before we even knew about fentanyl, chasing the dragon. They're always chasing that high.
That high. Oh, right?
So
wow.
Xylazine, but then when you overdose and your buddy tries to use Narcan on you because it's got xylazine in there, you're not coming back.
Wow.
So it just really comes down to, right, like, we do say no to drugs. There is that side of abstinence. Easier said than done, right? Because we're empathetic.
Right.
We understand the pull and the drive of addiction and how it takes over the body.
Yeah.
Easier said than done. Hey, just don't use drugs. Well, you know, but then we could talk about medication-assisted treatment, right? Where you can meet with a doctor and they can help work with you on the pharmaceutical side, and then they can work with you on the therapy side and help get you out of that just continuous cycle of addiction that just leads to, you know, much sadness, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But xylazine continues to be a problem. We are seizing it. We are seeing it.
Okay.
And we're and it's across Indiana. And again, back to the numbers. 9 times out of 10, the drug trends that we see here in Northern Indiana do mirror and match a lot of what we're seeing throughout the Midwest.
Yeah. So disheartening to hear. Chip, turning to our listeners and viewers here in the region, your website, DEA.gov/fentanyl-free, offers a toolkit for the entire community. How does this initiative translate to the streets of Northwest Indiana?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. This what we're doing right here is one of the ways our fentanyl-free America vision gets to the streets, right? Because people are now in their cars. They're listening on their earbuds on the treadmill, which is where I probably need to be more. they're listening, you know, wherever they're listening right now. It's the messaging, which is so important to just get this message that fentanyl is killing people. You need to stay away from it and getting that message out. But we like this website, and it's DEA.gov/fentanyl-free. The term that comes to mind for me is plethora. There is so much. There's a plethora of information on there for educators, for healthcare professionals, for media, right? Even for us in law enforcement. Okay. Even within DEA, we are constantly going to these sites that we have to, you know, make sure we know what we're talking about and make sure we're up on you know, the latest trends that, you know, maybe DEA headquarters is pushing out for us to learn about. Okay. But there's the, you know, there's so many, I think it's called Together for Families is a very good one on the fentanyl-free, DEA.gov/fentanyl-free, Together for Families. Easy talking points for parents, educators to speak with the youth about drugs, right? And as a side note, the CDC, and when DEA talks about all of our overdose stats, we get all of our numbers from the Centers for Disease and Control, CDC. Right. So we always have to cite our source, and that's our source. And the CDC tells all of us nationally, and this is a very sad stat, but the leading cause of death for Americans, check this out, Dee, the leading cause of death for Americans ages 18 to 44, drug overdose. I mean, that to me, even as a career DEA guy, that to me speaks volumes. Of course, you know, all, heart health is important. You know, all these different, you know, health things that we all talk about. We try to be healthy people, and you know, but why are we not talking more about the leading cause in death for 18 to 44 age range in the United States is drug overdose?
Right.
So we need to continue to scream for the rooftops that this is out there.
Absolutely.
Going back to the talking points for the family, right, which is on the website, the messaging. If a young adult, if a, you know, teenager, middle schooler, college, develop, you know, say to this young person, come up with an exit plan. If you're in a weird or tough situation where drugs are being pushed on you, come up with an exit plan to get out of that, you know. Yeah. And just know that, you know, we talk a lot about social media too, and this is all over our website. You 100% can never, never, never get any type of safe pill, drug, pharmaceutical from social media.
Absolutely.
That's driving a lot of this, a lot of these problems for the young. They go to social media, they get marketed counterfeit pills on social media. Then they turn to encrypted chats. They do the drug deal, the negotiation over the encrypted chat, and that leads then to the transfer of the drugs for the money. So there's no such thing as safe drug dealing on social media. No. So that's a huge thing. And then, you know, lastly, this probably one of our biggest messages, and we're huge, as you could tell, on the counterfeit pill message, is if you need Adderall, if you need oxycodone, if you need Xanax, that's fine. Make sure it comes from your doctor, prescribed. Make sure it comes from that brick and mortar pharmacy. That is the only safe way for you, for your family, to use those medications.
Isaac Chip, you just spoke about the leading cause of deaths for Americans 18 to 44 is drug overdose, right? So I want to ask you, is a win in 2026 still measured by the kilograms that are seized, or is your division now being judged by the number of lives saved in Northwest Indiana?
Well, that's another really good question. We definitely are measuring stats, right? I mean, we are measuring the amount of kilograms of whatever type of drug that are seized. We also measure the stats about guns seized, right? Because where there's drug trafficking, there's a good chance it's going to be violent crime. There's going to be guns involved.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm.
So, of course, we are tracking the amount of the arrest. But what we also do track, and those are like, you know, guns, drug seized, arrest, prosecutions, all that stuff goes back to day one. But something that we have been tracking more and more and more within DEA are community engagements, right? I'm the head of the DEA for the northern part of Indiana, top half of Indiana. Mm-hmm. I am evaluated annually on how well my office is going out to the community spreading the message.
That's true.
And in turn, because when we go out and we ask people, you know, to take this message back, we ask them to be ambassadors. In turn, the hope is, and I think we've seen it, maybe indirectly or directly, but the hope is that that does save lives, right? So we are constantly, we're constantly reviewing. We have a gentleman in my office who is constantly communicating with the coroner's offices, the medical examiner's offices across northern Indiana. We're constantly monitoring the overdose fatalities, those fatalities that are linked to fentanyl, that are not linked to fentanyl, that are linked to cocaine and fentanyl. We've seen an uptick in that. But that's probably the best way, I'd say, Dee, how are we measuring success with saving lives? We do track the numbers. And that in conjunction with or in partnership or coupled with, I guess, enforcement and community engagement should, and I think traditionally, historically, translate to less people dying.
Less people dying. Yeah. So, ASAC Chip, I think that's a great point for us to just take a short break.
Coming up in part two of this two-part series titled Inside the Fentanyl Crisis in Northwest Indiana, we'll be asking ASAC Cook how parents and teachers in the region can spot the digital signs of danger and what they need to say to their kids before a pill press becomes a tragedy. You can also listen to this conversation again by visiting our website, lakeshorepublicmedia.org, or you can see the video podcast version by visiting our YouTube channel. Just search for Lakeshore PBS. I'm Dee Dotson, and you're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media.